Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte's homicide count is alarmingly high. At just a little over the halfway point in 2019, the number of homicides has eclipsed all of last year. CMPD Chief Kropotny has called this a community health issue and has asked for cooperation from the community to get a handle on the use of guns to solve disagreements. So this hour, we are at Friendship Missionary Baptist Church for a WFAE public conversation on what is being done in the community by community members to address not just the homicide problem, but conditions that often lead individuals to make hair-trigger decisions that change countless lives forever. Statistics show that most of the people committing homicides in Charlotte know their victims. Statistics show most of the people involved in violent altercations are under the age of 25. We've talked about those young people many times in the past, but later this hour we will talk with three young people about the role violence and the prospect of violence plays in their lives and ask them to share their thoughts on how to prevent that violence. But first, we hear from three individuals who know the community conditions that create a favorable atmosphere for trouble and who have been working to find ways to short-circuit those conditions and lower the temperature by helping people find alternative methods of conflict resolution. Robert Dawkins is the political director for Action NC and the founder and state organizer for Safe Coalition NC, that's made up of over 15 community-based advocacy groups dealing with gun violence. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Mike.
Good to see you. Greg Jackson is founder of Heal Charlotte. That's a community engagement group providing after-school and day camps for at-risk youth, but that just scratches the surface of what Greg does in the community. Thank you for coming back. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
And Cedric Dean is founder of SAVE, Safeguard, Atone, Validate, Educate. That's a mentoring program working with young people. Nice to have you with us tonight, too.
So glad to be here.
Even though we talk a lot about this alarming number of homicides and how we're on track to beat last year, this is not the worst year ever, even if we finish the year at double what last year's was, or even double where we are today. But I'd like to hear from each of you before we talk about things being done in the community, about what your opinions are, what the driving factors behind this rising homicide rate is. Yes, guns are prevalent. Without the guns, we would have a lower homicide rate, but that's just one factor. So let me start with you and go down the panel. Robert Dawkins.
So one good thing that you mentioned, Mike, is even if we were to get to 150 murders, this doesn't equal the numbers that we had in the early 90s. Where we had 122 murders in Charlotte was only 400,000 people. So statistically, it's nearly impossible to get back to those numbers. What we did know from the early 90s was what was driving it. We knew it was the crack epidemic. That we knew, and that's we knew we had to treat it. We knew in 2007 when there was another spike, we knew what the issue was. We identified it, and it was gang violence. And that was Hidden Valley Kings, Crips, Bloods, all of that. And we were able to address it. What we've got to do now is to figure out, because both of those were epidemics, we have to figure out what are the causes of this epidemic that we have now. And I know people are quick to go to safe solutions, and they'll say, oh, it's upward mobility, it's this, it's that. But we need evidence-based data and evidence-based solutions. If it was just upward mobility, then our rate wouldn't stagger the way it is.
Right.
2017, it was up dramatically. 2016 was down. 2017 was up. 2018 was down. 2019 is up. We've got to invest the same amount of time in identifying what are the pure causes of this, the same way we did to say it's crack, the same way we did to say it was gang violence.
Cedric, you said something to one of our producers that really is troubling. You said that too many young people think like animals instead of human beings, and that in part is what has led to the rise in these homicides. Why? Why do they think of each other that way?
because we in America has made it popular to kill people. We allow our kids to kill 30 to 300 times a day playing games like Fortnite and Grand Theft Auto. I deal with kids, kids that have killed people. And you know the first thing they take, man, I just had to see what it was like to get the real thing. So when you sitting there shooting a gun all day long on a video game, and all you do is kill people and you get points for killing, then when you get out in the street and you see somebody that'll give you a gun for little to nothing, and now when you got that gun and that gun start talking to you, somebody look at you the wrong way, next thing you know, pow, that fast, and it's over. So when you think about why are we killing the way we killing, just think about a couple simple things. One, we took church out of school. When we did that right there, right, we took character. People don't see each other as human beings. They see each other as animals because we allow our kids, right, to just sit there and fight and kill and do whatever. And then all we do is say, we got to do another study.
Yeah.
But you don't really have to do a study. You just got to talk to the kids.
Chief Putney has called this a community health crisis. I mentioned that in the opening. And Greg, you agree with him. And you said that that's a good first step to recognize gun violence as a community health problem. But how does recognizing that help you make headway at solving the problem?
Well, when you, like, all right, so my pastor says this a lot, right? My pastor, Theo Schaefer, he says, as soon as you are immediately aware of something, you are immediately responsible for something, right? So the conversation has to happen, and you have to bring something to light so everybody's aware of it. But to get to your last question, and what we kind of tell these kids at Hill Charlotte, there's a integrity problem, there's a passion problem. Kids are passionate about the wrong thing. The integrity isn't there in the community. There's no purpose for these children. So they're walking around finding purpose on the street, which isn't conducive to how they live. And then the legacy that you follow is kind of the legacy that you live out.
Yeah.
So right now what we're trying to do is recreate what these kids' legacies are. A lot of them are still going to be the first ones to graduate from high school, the first ones to graduate from college, the first ones not to have to go to jail, the first ones not to have to go in a courthouse. Those things plague your family. And when you get used to that happening inside of your home, that culture in the home is broken. It's broken. It really is. And these kids are growing up in broken homes. And the confidence isn't there. And as far as adults, there's no accountability anymore. I came up in an era, I'm an 80s baby, man. I came up in an era where there was a grandma down a block that was going to hold me accountable if my mother wasn't home. As much, even if I wanted to go out and venture off and do something, it was somebody's parent, somebody's auntie, somebody's mama, besides just an officer, besides just a teacher, but it was somebody on that block that really, really cared. There was a lot of conduits for the community.
Right.
And there aren't a lot of conduits now and bridge builders for the community. We have a lot of finger pointers. This ain't my job. That ain't my job. This your job. This your job. This his job. This her job. It's everybody's job. We have a motto at Hill Charlotte. If everybody did a little bit, nobody would have to do a lot. I seen a kid smoking weed in the park the other day. I didn't come yell at him and get upset with him, but I told him, look around, man. Look at what you're doing right now. You got your son with you. That's a legacy he's going to follow. Fix it. And he immediately fixed it. It's just the way that you talk to these young kids now. They need to see somebody that looks like them, that been through what they've been through, showing them a positive way, man. Like, really showing them a positive way.
So, Robert, I know you want to jump in on this.
Yeah, so I agree with plenty of things that Greg has said, and there's a few things I do want to point out. I think Chief Putney, when he's saying it's a community epidemic, that's an easier way of saying what it really is. And what it really is it's a public health epidemic, and it has to be treated scientifically. The same way that we treat any other disease, we have to treat violence as a disease. And that's why there's three things that if you're going to treat things as a public health disease, and they covered some of it. First, you have to adequately identify the problems with evidence-based Then you have to come up with evidence-based solutions. And the part that they've talked about, you've got to change community norms. But the big part is you also have to be real with yourself. And I see a lot of people not being real with theirself. Yeah. And what we tell each other is, oh, this generation is so out of control because we're 50 and we got kids. But I want to take you back to the 80s, because I was a 70s baby, and I was around in the 80s. We killed people like crazy in the 80s. The 80s had the highest rates of killing in Charlotte. You best not go to Earl Village. You will get laid out. We would not be talking about no 70 murders. 70 murders is a thing that came about in Charlotte in the early 2000s. We laid people down in the street, but now we are grown, and we want to act like, since we're parents, that this is something new. The rap generation that I grew up in, every day, Cedric's talking about playing Fortnite. I got to get home to play Fortnite. I listen to folks saying, I'm going to introduce your brains to the street every day in my car. Very few people. There are kids with guns now. We all had guns in the 80s.
So yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, and I wasn't part of that scene, but the guns back then were used in drug deals that went wrong, and between gangs later on, I think, in our history in Charlotte and around the country. Today, we talk a lot about building trust between this community of young people and the police. It seems to me that they don't trust each other, that the young people don't have trust for each other. That's why they're so quick, or partly why they're so quick to use a gun, right?
That's why, just to jump in real quick, that's why I'm talking about character values. And I can easily put it on themes of the city and say it's gentrification and social injustice. We can easily say that, but I'm talking about the character of these kids and the low empathy that walks around on these streets every day. That when you start to value your life, you start to value other people's lives. When people are instilling in you moral values of how to live and be a productive citizen, it's contagious. It's contagious. I got kids that are contagious to being right and being good because it's what's around them all day.
We talked before this show started, you and I, Greg, about how difficult it is to get these young people, once they make a bad decision, not to make another bad decision. Even though they try, they end up making another bad decision. And I know, Cedric, you have experience in prison. You went to prison for selling cocaine. But now you're out, and you're working with young people. And I want to hear from you about why it is so difficult, or why it seems that young people are so willing to pick up a gun and do something that they've seen destroy lives around them. Why doesn't that seem to have an impact?
Because it's in the environment that they live in. When you talk about empirical evidence, right, I could take you, and I got three police officers that was a part of our program that we do at Timber Ridge Apartments, and we was in the Hickory Grove Library. 15 kids that was out there when they had that murder the other day, right, that witnessed firsthand the shooting, that could tell you why the shooting went down, tell you how the shooting happened, tell you who beefing with who. But you know what? When you do a study, you ain't talking to them kids like that. My point is this right here. The resources at the Mecklenburg County Jail, right? The same people with the ankle monitors on, them the same people that go and come and back and forth, but guess what? When they get out, they can't get in the programs because they are violent. So all the programs that really the funding is going to that could really help an individual like that, they exempt from them because they won't want nothing to do with it.
I know Robert Dawkins wants to jump in on this. We have to take a break. We'll do it right after we come back from the break. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE, a special WFAE public conversation coming to you from Friendship Missionary Baptist Church. a community approach to addressing homicide. We're here with Robert Dawkins, founder of Safe Coalition NC, Greg Jackson, founder of Heal Charlotte, and Cedric Dean, founder of SAVE, Safeguard, Atone, Validate, Educate, all three organizations working with young people to try to help them find their way in a really complicated environment. So, Robert, you wanted to jump in on what Cedric was just talking about.
And Cedric's talking about what you normally get in the environment through the city or through whatever. Some people go and knock in doors that they're comfortable and give you a survey. I'm talking public health. I'm talking the same way when Charlotte had a hepatitis issue over off of Little Rock, every door gets knocked. To give you the example, Oakland. And I'm big on epidemiological fixes. So Oakland went and did their thing, and they said, we need to treat 17 to 24-year-olds because this is the people that we believe are murdering. Murder rate that went down zero. The population that they should have been treating was 25 to 32, because in their city, the murders were being caused by 25 to 32-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Once they went door to door, and we're talking about scientific people, not your uncle that's well impassioned and coming out with a little push survey. When the health department had a problem with brain-eating amoeba got stopped. And brain-eating amoeba got stopped in 2 weeks, because when you deem it a public health system, we're not talking about, are you happy with this? What did you do yesterday? What were you thinking about yesterday? What was the causes of you thinking about that yesterday? Because Cedric can give you some real causes, but that's one segment of our homicides. All of the people, and this might shock y'all, but all of the people is doing the killing in Charlotte ain't black. I know they like to tell you that, but everybody that's getting killed here in Charlotte ain't black. If you look at where the murders are happening, they're happening all over Charlotte. Mm-hmm. They're talking about one facet of what we need, and that's community norms. And I'll tell you another community norm that's got to be changed is the domestic violence community norm. And until you get people to see women as not an object, and not, because if you go and look, black or white, if you go back and look at the shootings, and I'm not the data guy, but I shot you because you said something to my girl. I said something because you was the baby daddy came over. And it all goes back to women being objectified. So until you change that as one of your criteria, you can tell me all day, if I don't find a gun, I'm going to kill you with a knife, I'm going to hit you over the head, I'm going to do whatever. So we talk guns all the time, but guns are easy. If you want to kill somebody, you're going to kill them. And how do we get that effort to kill folks? Because white folks will kill you over meth the same way black people will kill you over crack. And one of the things epidemiologically we need to do is stop always phrasing this on what's comfortable. And the comfortable things to say, they don't have any choice because they're poor. What do you expect from black people? They've been disadvantaged. But people have to have control over themselves. And Cedric's right. Some of that came from taking the churches out. Some of it came from broken families. But what I will say, while everybody's talking gun prevention, we're talking gun interruption and gun intervention. And the two things I like about these two people sitting here is their programs aren't 9 to 5 and they go home. He on the corner, Amy James, he's up on the corner at 12 o'clock at night, because having a kid talking to you at Saturday at 2 o'clock ain't going to stop him from getting killed at 11 o'clock on LaSalle. He's there on the corner of LaSalle. He's there on the corner of Amy James.
Well, all three of you mentor these young people. And Greg, as we talked before the program, you've been known to take them in and give them a place to sleep.
Yeah.
And kind of guide them, even though they fail you from time to time. And I'm sure that all of you see failures every day, that you're working your hardest to change, and it just doesn't happen. What keeps you going, Greg?
I'll just go ahead and say this ain't me right here. So I'm completely out of my flesh. So I'm called to do this. You can't choose to do this type of work. I don't know who would. If you was, you crazy. All right. This is an absolute calling. I'm completely in my purpose.
So help the people listening to us on the radio who have no interaction with these young people. Help them to understand who they are, what their lives are like. And we'll talk to some young people in a second. But what their lives are like, what you're up against, what they're up against.
I mean, it depends what child you want to talk about. You want to talk about the young child that lives right at the next building to me that needs me to drive him to camp every day because his mom goes to work at 9 o'clock and doesn't get home till 9 p.m. And I might have to feed him 2-3 times a day. Or you want to talk about the young lady that lives in a hotel room and would do anything possible to not have to go home to that. And she would stay with me and babysit my kids all day if she could. So she doesn't have to go back to that environment and have to see that. Because they're only with me in the summertime from 10 to 4. They're with me in after school from 3:30 to 6:30. When they leave me, they go back to YouTube. They go back to Instagram. They go back to poverty. They go back to an environment that tells them they ain't gonna be nothing. And they're not going. And that courage and that confidence and that integrity and that passion and that purpose that you keep instilling in them day after day, if you are outnumbered by the opposition, these are little kids, man. It's hard for them to keep that. It's hard for them to hold on to that. It is easy to be discouraged and unhappy and say, this is what it's going to be.
But it's not just the kid's fault.
It's not ever the kid's fault. Okay. No kid come out the womb cursing. No kid come out the womb packing a 9. No kid come out the womb smoking weed. Kids come out crying for their parents.
Cedric.
That's what they come out crying for.
Cedric.
So, most of the kids that I work with, and first of all, full disclaimer, right? You're talking about me. I want to be clear with that, right? At the age of 13, I was baptized in the street. I became a thug. A person put a gun in my hand. I used it to shoot drug dealers because he said, when you walk up to him, you put one in the leg, and then you say, you know where the next one's going, and you point it to his head. So this is how the training takes place. Now, back in my time, though, you had 16-year-olds that went to jail, and you was around adults. They done kind of cured that. But when you look at the kids that's out there right now, and you got a mother that's in prison and a daddy that's dead, or you got a father that's on drugs and a mother that's missing in action, right? Now you got a grandmother trying to do everything she can to raise 6 kids. She don't have no help. She don't have no resources. And then you got organizations, which I won't name them, but y'all know who they are, that tell you, Mr. Dean, you can't take these kids to church. You know, that's a liability. You got organizations that say we can't put kids inside of a van to take them where they need to go. This is public organizations.
Talk
and
about
I'm
it.
Tired of people putting politics before the people. When you talk about the children that we got, I'm talking about the churches that's out there on every block that could take these kids and bring them into that church. This is where they at.
So let's talk about what the three of you do and your organizations and organizations like yours do and what you wish other organizations would start doing that would have an impact on bringing these kids toward a better life. What do you do, Robert Dawkins? Tell me what your organization does.
We're more of the policy side. So Cedric and those are working on the actual streets. Now, don't forget, we do grassroots organizing. Mm-hmm. And our job is to build power in neighborhoods, whether it's Lake Arbor, whether it's Heritage Park, whether it's any of those. The issues that need to be worked on, we find out, and we're the ones that go to city council, county commission, general assembly. They tell us no quick, and we come back. But we go and we try to work on those issues. What I can tell you, I want to follow up on what Cedric said. Cedric gave you the smaller example. What we find is that groups like Cedric's, groups like Greg's, have a harder time to get funding than groups that do the superficial stuff.
Why?
So
why?
Why? Because, one, people give money to groups that already have money to continue and fulfill that project. So until Greg and those can get to a point of funding to where they're saying this costs $100,000 and I got $80,532 and I just need $20,000 from you, it's hard to get money.
So we got Greg and Cedric on the street with their own credibility because you guys have walked the talk because you've lived the life. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know what you're talking about. You know where these kids are because you were there.
Yeah.
So what works in your minds best? Where you have success stories to tell, what have you done that worked out right?
I was consistent.
Yep.
Every day. Consistent. It builds trust. And when kids can trust consistency, it changes how they look at life. They are used to inconsistency. They're used to somebody saying, I'm going to come get you next week, and they don't come to get them next week. Yep. They're used to saying, yo, we're going to take you out, and they don't never go out. They're used to inconsistency, and that consistency built this amount of trust that I have with not only these kids, but with their families, to where I can send a phone call and I can say, I'm taking them here. I'm taking them to the Whitewater Center. And the parents are like, please go, because wherever you going with them, I know they in good hands. And to Robert's point with the funding thing, he's absolutely right. But why would you fund me? I don't do it the way you want me to do it. I don't do it the way you want me to. I don't abide by your rules and your regulations. And somebody told me from an organization I'm rogue. And I said, well, you met me protesting, so I might be. You're absolutely right. But I'm not going to meet your standards, because your standards does not fit my community. My community doesn't need what you think they need. They need what we give it. And if you trust me, you would give it to me. But you can't trust something that's actually going to fix the problem.
Yep.
Why would you?
Right.
Because you need the problem to exist.
From the person that has to go and sit and talk to the funders and try to get this, my normal day with that is, you know, Robert, we'd like to collect some stories. And if, you know, we can collect some stories and we'll. But here's the whole point. The people that's doing the work, and also other groups, like when the city or county has funding, only a certain group of people get the money. So the Gregs and those don't always get it because they didn't fill a report out right. They didn't turn something in on time. So who gets the money? I was looking at one program, and we were sitting there, and Greg was sitting there with me, and I was looking at all the people that got the money, and they said, we did real good with the kids. I said, what did you do with the kids? Well, once a week they'd come and we'd do art. I said, was you doing art on LaSalle Street at 11 o'clock at night? Because ain't nobody getting killed up at the Beckler Museum. I mean, why? But Greg Cedric is doing interruption work. He's at the hospital when somebody gets shot. You know, Cedric's there talking to the parents and saying, do you think your kid got shot over this? That doesn't fit into a nice proposal like we took them out and they did finger painting.
Right.
And that's my issue, is there's a disconnect. And it's not just with the foundations. I hate to say it, but it's also with the faith-based community. If you dress, and I dressed up because I love friendship. I love coming to your social justice committee. But I'm on them streets. I'm in J's. Greg ain't put on a pair of dress shoes. Use just a hornet hat and some J's.
No, I just wanted to come out and dress up today.
Cedric.
But if you don't have that, the funders don't. They look at us and say, I'm not going to fund you. I'm going to fund Reverend Dr. Dockety Dock.
Right.
Because he's got a building and some supplies.
And look, you know what? We bashing funders, and that's, you know, that's great.
We still need that money.
No, but listen, I want to let everybody understand this. And this is something that happens in the nonprofit world all the time. We get comfortable with having to go ask for money. Mm-hmm. We get comfortable with that. We get comfortable. We tell families, don't live check to check. Don't do that. It's not stable. But then we go live grant to grant.
Yes, sir.
We tell people, own your house. But we don't own a building. We don't own units. We don't own transportation. It doesn't make. So it's about that time that you practice what you preach. I pride myself on being very entrepreneurial on how I raise my money. This work gonna happen whether you fund me or not. I want you to understand that.
I want to get Cedric into this before we have to go to a break. Because Cedric, in the middle of SAVE, the name of your organization is the word validate. And it seems to me that a lot of these young people have had terrible lives, very rough lives. They probably haven't done all that well in school. Sometimes that makes them feel miserable about having to go to school. They make bad decisions, and they're told these are bad decisions, etc. How do you give them a good feeling, something that makes them feel good about doing well for themselves? How do you accomplish that in the face of all that?
First, let me answer the questions you asked about my organization got started, because I think that's important. When I was in federal prison, they had 12 murders in 1 year at one prison. The warden didn't have a clue about what to do. The psychologists, all the people that had the degrees, they didn't come for them. They came to the person that had the thugologist on his poster in his room. me. So I was forced to have to work with these kids that was coming from Chicago and L.A. and a lot of these areas that was committing most of the murders so that they could stop them on the prison yard. So I created an organization, SAVE, Safeguard, Atone, Validate, Educate, to give restorative hope. What happens is when these kids get to a position where they feel they have no hope at all.
And no one cares.
No one cares, because what happens is this. You go to a correctional facility or you go to a training school, right? Guess what they do? This is me. This is what I know for a fact. They say, look, I can't really help these people the way you can, because if I help them, I ain't going to have no job. So it's like the more of you come back, the more job security I got. I didn't want these kids, the kids of these individuals that was in prison, to end up in prison. So it all goes back to sitting there saying, hey, man, I'm going to come to your basketball game with you, right? I'm going to sit out there the whole time, but you're behind coming to church with me Sunday morning. And it's a trade-off, and they'd be happy to do it. So when I got out of prison, Charlene Henderson and Tijuana Brown. Tijuana Brown had been in prison. She had her daughter in prison. She said, I will never have any of my kids go to prison. So what we did as an organization, Charlene, and she had been faced with murder. Her brother was brutally murdered, shot in the back of the head right here in Charlotte. Her niece was left dead in the field. So she knew it firsthand. So when I went to her, I said, look, we got to figure out a way to make these kids job ready instead of jail ready. And credit to CMPD. I said it. You know why? Because when I first got out, I went to Chief Putney at a forum like this right here. I said, you know the thing I don't respect about you? That if I wanted to cooperate to help incarcerate these kids, you would let me. But I want to help save them. And he gave me the first job that I ever had. And he paid me to go out there and to save these kids. And he got me where I could go in the schools like Thomasboro Academy and sit down and take these kids that was on that school to prison pipeline and bring these kids out to churches and to other places and deal with that inherent stresses that they got. What he talking about when he talking about a mental health crisis, if you got your baby mama boyfriend at home touching on them, when they come to school and they taking it out on the principal and the teacher, that's displaced aggression.
Cedric Dean is the founder of SAVE. Greg Jackson is the founder of Heal Charlotte. Robert Dawkins is the founder of SAFE Coalition NC. When we come back, we're going to hear from some young people who have been helped by these two of these three gentlemen. It's Charlotte Talks. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's a public conversation on a community approach to homicides. We've spoken so many times about young people, we rarely get a chance to talk to them about anything, much less about violence. But most of the people who are impacted by violence in Charlotte, particularly by homicide, are people who know each other and people who are under the age of 25. So we're going to talk to some people about violence and how it impacts their lives. This is Trinity Snowden. She is 15 years old, and she is at Turning Point Academy, one of Cedric Dean's mentees, and also with Beauty After the Bars. Sylvia Clark is 22 years old, studying criminal justice at CPCC. And she is with Greg Jackson's organization, Heal Charlotte. And Yassine Major is 18 years old. He graduated from Harding High School in June and plans to attend UNC Pembroke in the fall. He volunteers with Heal Charlotte. Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it. So I want to make the best use of our time, and I'm not sure who to ask this question of. How safe or unsafe do you feel on a regular basis in your neighborhood, in your lives? Trinity.
On a regular basis, I feel unsafe, especially when I be going to school, because I have to wake up early in the morning and watch my surroundings. I go out, I hear gunshots, I just stop and be like, I don't even live in a good neighborhood. So it feels like I can't even bring out my little siblings, take them to the park and enjoy themselves, because it just don't feel safe nowhere.
Yassine, Major, you're 18 years old. You're about to go to college. When's the last time you felt unsafe in your environment?
Actually, I still currently feel unsafe in certain circumstances. There's certain times when I walk outside and my anxiety happens to come up because you're never prepared if you're going to live to see the next day or live to see the next hour. I feel more unsafe for my family members too. One of my biggest fears is, you know, getting a phone call from somebody saying, oh, your brother's deceased over nonsense. And I feel like it's an easy access to get into violence in like areas I live in.
Yeah. I'm not going to ask you the same question, Sylvia, because I see you nodding in agreement and recognition of what both Trinity and Yassine have said. But I do want to ask you about what you think the causes of this. And one of the causes that you have mentioned to our producers is that a lot of this is about respect. People just want respect. Is that the driving force behind many of these shootings? They feel disrespected?
Yes. Sometimes I go out and I see guys when they're in groups, and especially at the Charlotte Transit, it's more drama that goes on out there. And sometimes it leads to the neighborhoods, or guys get chased back to the neighborhoods. They bring more of the violence to where they live at than where they started. When it comes down to the respect level with them, all they want is respect. A lot of guys, when they bump into each other and somebody don't say excuse me too fast, the other person gets real mad, or they wants to take out a gun and shoot because they feel like if they don't have respect for them, they won't have respect for any of the family members.
And you're making a point that Yassine told one of our producers about, and that is the need for education about conflict resolution.
Yep.
If you have a gun in your pocket, you're all too often ready to use it because over something that's just silly in some cases.
Character.
Yassine, why is that such a difficult concept for some people? Why do they have to be taught that?
The only thing that people know of is ending their lives or just shooting them in general or killing them. It's sad to say that not many people are educated to resolve conflicts, because there are other ways that you could resolve a conflict.
And Trinity, you think there's too much negative thinking which leads to violent crime. What do you mean by negative thinking?
At Turning Point, when I was there, it used to be too much negative. That's, to me, I'm going down the wrong path, as people say, but I can change that. I have my mentors that can help me change that. At the end of the day, we all have to stick together, even if we're in the bad or the wrong. We're family no matter what. That's what I always say.
I want to tell people I didn't know what Turning Point was. It's a school that you went to for a while.
Yes, an alternative school.
Okay, it's an alternative school for people who have gotten themselves in trouble in other schools. And I think a lot of our listeners don't know about Turning Point. Do you feel comfortable telling us why you ended up there?
I ended up there because I disrespected my teacher. I wanted to get my way, but now I learned that I always can't get my way. So I spent 90 days there. My mentor, Tawanda Brown, Beauty After Bars, helped me get through it. So now I'm finally out and going back to my home school this year.
Sylvia, Greg Jackson is your mentor. He's my personal hero because I've read a lot about Greg, and we've talked before, and I just think what he does is amazing. You've gone on to study criminal justice at CPCC. You've had what many would consider to be a pretty damn tough life. You were homeless for a while, and you say you always try to stay level-headed in the face of all this adversity that you faced because you didn't want to fail. Where did that strength in you come from?
Well, when homelessness started for me, I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
So I was house to house. My mom wasn't, she had living situations, and my dad is a full-time truck driver. I was trying to find my way. Mentally, I didn't want to end up like a lot of people that I see out here on the street that has a sign up saying, I'm homeless, I need money. So I went to school, I dropped out to go to Job Corps, dropped out of Job Corps, went back to school, graduated from school, 2016, high school. I left, went back to Job Corps, or kind of left the Job Corps. I took up wildland firefighting and forestry. I am the first African-American female that has did forestry and wildland firefighting in any Job Corps.
Wow. I'm just curious, when you tell this story to your peers and to people younger than you, what impact does your success and the fact that you did this have on them?
I don't think it has much change on them.
What impact has your decision to go into criminal justice had on them?
They slide away from me. They look at me in awe and they slide away from me because they don't like cops.
You know, Chief Kerputney said when he was young, he didn't like cops either. Now he's the chief of police. What attracted you to that field?
I wanted to help people my age and younger mentally, and some people older than me, because I know people older than me, some of them, the majority, don't have the same mindset that some of us do have. Mm-hmm. And they kind of act more childish than I do. I just want to really help people mentally when they, before they step outside to even get to any kind of crime or committing a crime, I really want to step in when that's about to happen and isolate it.
You have seen, Yasin, you have said that you've seen kids give up on life from a lack of support, that when they do, we should not be surprised that they resort to bad behavior. What kind of support do you see lacking in the lives of a lot of these young people?
Most children, or like people my age that go to this way, we lack of two parents. I myself live in a single parent house. So I feel like because not many children live in a house with two parents, mostly like their fathers, they don't have structural support. As far as like academics, not many children are academically supported.
By they teachers, by parents, by whom?
All of them. Like counselors, teachers. They don't talk with students about like college life and life after high school. They just talk about receiving a high school diploma and that's it.
Obviously, you're going to college. How did you, without the support you just said is lacking in some areas, how did you do it?
Well, throughout my life, I've experienced some stuff. I'm the oldest child. I have five brothers and three sisters. So because I'm the oldest, I want to show my siblings that you could do it. During my high school years, I've been homeless many times, and I felt very embarrassed and ashamed to tell people. In fact, this is the first time I publicly spoke about it. Most people, they accept the fact that they're homeless. I just use my homeless as motivation for me for school and my future. So
I noticed, Trinity, when Sylvia was talking about her accomplishments, that you were really enthusiastic in your support of her success. I'm curious as to, you're the youngest person up here, you're 15. I'm curious as to what your, do you have goals for your life?
I do.
And what are they?
My goal is to be the first out of all my siblings to finish college and be a good person that I am.
You said, to be a good person that I am. You said it in the present tense. Did it take you a while to get there, or did you always feel that way about yourself?
It took me a while.
Why?
Because throughout my life, there's a lot of people that doubted me and told me I was never going to be nothing. But once I got to that certain step and I had some important people in my life, Charlene Henderson, Cedric Dean, and Tawanda Brown, they made me be the person that I am. So throughout my life, I'm never going to forget them.
Wow. You're studying law enforcement, Sylvia, and you want to be, I'm told, a crime investigator for the FBI.
Yes, sir.
What does it take to do that?
Well, a lot of people don't just get on with crime scene investigation in Charlotte. Me working my way up to it, I think that's the easiest point. I think it takes a lot to get there.
Yeah.
A lot of studying.
So when you do that, can you figure out a way to interface with people who came from or who come from backgrounds like yours? You're going to be this FBI person. Are you going to be able to go and into the neighborhoods and deal with people who came from backgrounds like yourself and help them?
You know what? It's the way you talk to them. It's the respect that you give them. Behind everything that they think about, only thing that they want is somebody to come to them and talk to them genuinely. I think that's what they really need. They need a genuine person to talk to them genuinely.
And you're doing that. You're mentoring young people today, and you've said that a lot of them come from abused situations.
Yes.
And that you talk to, you approach them with gentleness.
Yes. I have two nephews that I hang around all the time, and I ask questions to all the time. And them are, my nieces and nephews are the only people other than other kids, and even my mentors, I really want them to learn from what I'm doing too.
And Yassine, you're going to UNC Pembroke in the fall. You'll be a freshman, and you want to major in the law eventually and become an attorney and work in family and immigration law and maybe run for Congress. Mm-hmm. When you run for Congress, what do you think you'll be focusing on?
Well, my goal is to focus on more of local laws and national laws, because I feel like there are some laws that are implemented in this country that are not fair. And as a politician, my goal, I want to work with younger children because I want them to experience that politicians are not like a scary person, scary people. Basically, I want to give back to the community. I feel like the community done so much for me. I feel like I deserve to give them the same bit.
So let me bring it back to the reason we're here tonight, this community approach toward homicide prevention, and ask each of you, what do you think, what solutions or ideas do you have about how we can cut down on the number of homicides? I'll start with the youngest person, Trinity, because you've got your stuff together, kid. You do. You told us that before we started that you have had a close friend who was killed, killed by a gun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as you go through the community, as you live your life, what do you think is the glaring thing that we're missing, that if we just tackled that, we'd put a dent in this?
Like, she didn't even do nothing wrong. So it was like, that was just out the blue. And it just devastated me because it's like, if I was her age, that could have been me. Just like, why we just can't stop putting the guns down? I always thought about that. Like, I go to school and all people talk about is, oh, I want a gun. Oh, I have a gun. But you don't talk about your education. You don't know how much important it is into you and for your life. You need it throughout your life. Like, you do not need guns when you grow up, when you go to sleep, when you go out here and there. Like, we understand you're trying to protect yourself, but you do not need it to shoot people.
Sylvia.
I feel like we should be more involved in our community, more activities, more programs to keep more younger people my age, her age, keep doing something that's actually positive, give them something to think about or look forward to in the future. Because a lot of them don't have much to look forward to in the future, and a lot of them don't expect change.
Yassine, you get the last word.
I believe that not enough children or people are shown, they don't know what the world has to offer. And I feel like that not many children, they get enough support. I feel like because children, they're not trained on other ways or other conflicts, they're so quick to just shoot and shoot. And I feel like all we have to do is just educate them on other ways, resolve conflicts, offer like classes in different communities. I watched my mom get shot at over a car dispute. I feel like if you just talk to people about different ways that you could solve solutions, then maybe this wouldn't be as much as a problem.
Yassine Major is 18, Sylvia Clark, 22, both pursuing college educations and careers, and Trinity Snowden, who came to us at the very last minute, just before we started the show, who is 15 years old. Thank you for participating in this. Appreciate it very much.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.